This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And I am glad to be driving home today. Because there was a moment today when I wasn't sure my car would be drivable. Oh, I did a silly thing today. And out of the kindness of God's heart, he helped me react quick enough that I didn't run head into another car. After it happened, I just thought, oh, thank you, Jesus, thank you, Jesus. Oh, man. Part of the reason is that it has been an exciting week. Woo! Let me say that again. Woo! This has been one of those weeks where everything is going fine. It's going fine. But, you know, everything just comes to a head. And so you're just going ting, 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 ting. You just got all these balls you're trying to keep in the air at the same time. And you know what? Everything turned out okay. But they're just some big things that we were, you know, trying to get done and move through and moving on to the next thing. And it's the beginning of a new year, which means there's a lot of things that were done at the end of last year, and now there's questions, and those have to be researched, and you know, so it's a very exciting time. To quote from the news, Star Trek, I like this customer, very exciting, because it was exciting this week. It's probably going to be exciting next week too, but you know what, that's okay. We're meeting the challenges. I was talking to one guy today, and we were talking about what the week had been like, and I just told him, I said, we could all sit around and think about what's coming next, but the fact is we can't solve a problem until it's a problem. So we might as well just relax and do the best job we can do today. And then if a problem comes up, well, then we'll deal with it. So it's been a good week. It's just been really busy and mentally challenging and invigorating. Anyways, I had hoped to tell you today that I was on day 9 of the challenge. I'm actually on day 2. Maybe we could say unofficially I'm on day 9 of the challenge to go 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing. I was going in for a breakfast Tuesday morning. And I was late. I should have left earlier. I was late, and I was behind somebody, and they weren't going very fast. And I allowed myself to kind of sit and stew in this feeling of, come on, come on, come on, I have to get going, you know, without saying anything. And then at one point, I looked down at the clock, and I knew I was going to be late, and I gave the softest little growl. And then I thought, okay, that would be a complaint. Because this is the no grace thing. So, anyway, so it is day 2. I am telling myself that unofficially it's day 9. Part of that is just to kind of give myself a little more encouragement. That no, you're not, you know, just, you've had a really good run of it. And keep going and keep going and keep going. Because I need to get this thing done. Really, it is within my capacity to go 21 days without criticizing, complaining, or gossiping with no grace. This is in my capacity. I need to do this. It's just a matter of focus. Focus at this point. Anyways, okay, this week, there's a few things that I wanted to finish up on in terms of the special on Nova that I was watching, What Darwin Never Knew. Last week, we did part one of that and rehearsed how there have been some new revelations in genetic research that are really fascinating in terms of it's not just genes that put on the whole show. In fact, there are protein encoding genes, and then you also have switches that turn those genes on and off and actually multiplex those genes so that they can do multiple things and produce multiple kinds of things. And then you have these Hawks genes that are at the top of the whole hierarchy, and they're issuing orders, and it's very cool, and it is designed very much like a computer program. I mean, if I was going to go onto the computer and design a creature creator, this is exactly how I would design it. I would sort of have a master body plan map, and then I would have a bunch of switches that you could flip around, and that would make arms appear in different places and kind of move pieces around. And this, I mean, this is how you'd build it as a designer. But of course, if you're an atheistic evolutionist, you don't want there to be a designer. And so you come up with other explanations for all this. So beyond all that, it really doesn't matter, because the science they're doing is very good science, and it's cool. So we should enjoy the science. The second half of the NOVA program was about the big question of what makes us human. Because as they got into this second section, they very much acknowledged that humans are different, and then they turned around and said, but they aren't. So first they said, there's no question that we do things that no other creature on the planet does. We have art, we have architecture, we have music, we study medicine, we study science, we build things technologically. There's no other creature on the planet that can push a button and slaughter millions with an atomic bomb. I mean, we're it, you know? We're it. And there's no question that we're different. And then they said, so it's no wonder that for hundreds of millions of years, we thought that we had the spark of God in us, that we were special, when in fact we're not special. And what was interesting to me was, as they were saying this, that for hundreds of millions of years, people thought that that showed that we had the spark of God within us. They showed a picture of Da Vinci's painting where God is reaching out from the clouds to animate Adam. I said, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, we're going back to the Dark Ages is when we believe that. And I've had a friend this week, I was talking to him about it, and he was laughing that they actually picked a picture from the Middle Ages to illustrate this, that the implication was that, well, there's nobody believes that now, so at least no one that counts. But see, that's the kind of thing that you just give them a little grace and you say, that's fine, just do your science, we're gonna love your science. So they came up with a lot of really interesting stuff around this what makes us human, but specifically I'd like to focus in on a woman scientist's work that I thought was really an interesting approach. She came at it from a very statistical approach. She said that once we sequenced the genomes and stuff, and once we started figuring out that in fact you've got very few genes and a lot of things are really similar, her approach was, well, now that we know that the genome between a chimpanzee and a human is 99% similar, that 1% must, you know, be an amazing thing to cause all these changes. Because you have to understand that the biologist, if they're atheistic biologists, they believe that all of the things that we do that chimps don't do are directly attributed to some kind of natural cause. Therefore, they're going to investigate the natural as a way of explaining that we have these additional capabilities, and if they can explain them away, then there's no need for a designer, no need for a creator. Okay, well, that's fine. We understand why they're doing it, but it's quite fascinating to hear of their discoveries of why we are physically different. Her approach was, let's focus on this 1% and let's do some statistical analysis. Now, later on in the interview that I was reading from her, she made the interesting statement that the kind of work that she's doing would be impossible without modern-day computers and without clusters of computers and massively parallel computing. At one point she said, if we had to take even like a desktop computer and run some of this analysis, it would take like 35 years. But because we can cluster the computing power, we can get the same analysis done in an afternoon. And so you need some horsepower to get this stuff done, which to me, again, is very interesting because it's the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And so these are things that could only be sought out in conjunction with other humans inventing processing power, inventing IC chips and more powerful chips and more powerful chips that can do these really computationally intensive tasks. So there's really kind of a hand-in-hand thing that's happening here, that God has hidden things, and in order for us to get to them, we have to have a whole community of disciplines to get there. And I thought that was kind of cool. Anyway, so her approach was, let's hone in on the million, the 1% here. And it's, she said it's about 15 million base pairs of difference. And let's look at the chimpanzee and the rest of the animals for all those areas. And let's find the sections where there is very small difference between the chimp and the rest of the animals, and there's a large difference between the chimp and us. Okay, that's a great statistical analysis. She does that. The highest ranked one that popped out was a section that was 118 letters long. This section in the chimp, when compared with the chicken, is only different by two letters. Bearing in mind that according to the evolutionary timelines, there's 100 and I forget what it is exactly. It's like 150 million years between the time the chicken evolved and the chimpanzee evolved. And over 150 million years, you only have two letters difference in this 118 letter sequence. So that's like, what, 1% difference? 118, 1% would be 1.18, two letters, maybe 1.5%, something like that. The difference between chimpanzees and humans in this section is 18 letters. And they think this is a section that deals with brain growth and those types of things. 18 letters. And she said in her interview that in a blink of an eye, 6 million years on the evolutionary timeline, she said, which is really just like a blink in the eye when you're talking about evolution, somehow we evolved, quote unquote, mutated, whatever, 18 letters of difference in this one section. It's such a huge difference that the scientists have had to come up with some kind of naming convention to make them feel better about the fact that there's been this huge leap in this section. And so they now call it the Human Accelerated Region. And this is HAR1, Human Accelerated Regions. Because they really don't have any explanation for this. So you gotta call it something, because once we call it something, we feel better about it. So the HAR region, one, and it has to do with brain growth. There's a HAR2 region, and they found that there's a lot of changes in that region, and part of those changes is changes in the thumb area, because as you know, or you may not know, our thumb is unique among all the animals. We are the, I talked about this several episodes ago, about the human thumb, and how it has a great level of dexterity, and that allows us to do things like take our thumb and touch the tips of each of our fingers. Apes can't do that. And all that that brings to us in terms of abilities to make tools and to make art and all those wonderful things, it all comes down to one little bone at the base of our thumb. And one of these HAR regions has that. It affects that. So that's pretty interesting. At this point, in this interview, they asked this lady, and they said at this point they have identified 200 of these regions. Mind you, you know, the acknowledgement is that in one of these regions, in a relative blink of an eye, there were a ton of mutations that caused us to get from a chimp to a human. And there's not just one of these regions, there's 200 of them. Now, some of them are not as dramatic as HAR1, granted, but they are all called human accelerated regions because there is this liftoff in these regions. And the interview stressed again the fact that you have this interesting hierarchy in the DNA where you've got this body plan map that's basically the same across a huge variety of creatures. And this body plan map is then flipping switches, and that's what's making all the variations, is the order and sequence of flipping these switches. And they said to her, so in other words, in order to make something really different, you just need to flip switches. And she said, yeah, she said, you can make things completely different by just flipping these switches, and it's really amazing. And most of these HAR regions are switch flipping regions. They are not protein encoding DNAs. And so we have the same basic building blocks of things between humans and the rest, if you're talking about what makes us different as humans. But what you have is a series of switches that are flipped in different patterns. Now then, you know, again, to me, that seems like evidence of design, because you're using the same basic subsystems over and over again. It reminded me, when I heard about it, of being out in California for our 20th wedding anniversary. My wife and I took a road trip to California. We flew out there and then rented a car and drove from LA up to San Francisco with multiple stops. And at one point, we were out at Pebble Beach. And if you wonder why it's called Pebble Beach, you don't have to wonder much when you just drive around, because eventually you make it to this beach that has these large pebbles, i.e. Pebble Beach. They're flat and round. And this beach, people, we assume it's people, stack these pebbles up. And so you just look across these beach and there's all of these pebble towers that are stacked up. And when you look at that, the first thing you think is, well, yeah, obviously somebody stacked all these things up. You've got the surrounding pebbles that are just randomly shoved around, but then all these things are stacked up. It's a quality of design. It's fundamentally different than the surroundings. And for me, when I look at 200 human accelerated regions where we all just took off, that speaks to me of design. I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I really don't have any problem whether creation was made in 6 days or whether it was made in 6 ages. I don't have any problem with God starting everything up 3 billion years ago, according to the evolutionary timelines, and letting things develop and develop and develop and develop, because the book of Genesis doesn't necessarily say it's 6 days, because the word that's used there is not just 24-hour days, it's eon or age. And so the book of Genesis, the first chapter, can easily be reinterpreted to say that God created the heavens and the earth, and there were 6 basic stages to what he did. And what we're told is at the end of those six stages, he then formed man out of the dust of the earth, i.e. out of the resources of the earth, and he breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And with all of this research, I don't have any problem at all believing that God watched the diversity and the adaptation of the species and watched it grow and all that kind of stuff, because that would be actually pretty cool. I mean, a video game like that would be really cool. Watch it all develop, and then when we got to bipeds that were close, that he reached down and went flip, 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 boom. And then he breathed. And he mated in some mysterious metaphysical way. He mated the big brain, dexterous capabilities of his new creation with his spark. And that's why we have humans. So again, as I said last week, as scientists are doing this research, understand that they are going to have a certain philosophy. And they're going to bring that philosophy to the table. But just give them some space, because they're doing good science. And eventually, they will get to the place where there will be some backtalk in their systems that will say, you know, this is just a little too good. I'm getting my mail. In a completely different field, I heard one scientist talking who was a believer, and he believed in a designer. And he was about to give a talk to some other scientists, and he wanted to run his viewpoints by someone of an opposing viewpoint because he wanted to get some feedback from him and make whatever adjustments he needed to make in his speech. And so he called this guy up, and they went out to lunch. He said, I'm going to be giving this speech. I'd like to run it by you. If I've got the story correctly, and I heard him tell it, so hopefully I've got the story correct. When they got out to lunch, they started talking, and the guy across the table said something to the effect, you probably think that I don't believe in a designer. And this kind of took this scientist back, because he invited this guy because he thought he was an atheist, and that was that. And the guy just said, with all of the discoveries and things that they've made, with all of the wonderful balance, I'm backing into my garage, so I will talk later. Talk louder. With all of the wonderful discoveries that had been made of the balance in the universe and how finely everything is tuned and how if it wasn't tuned just right, we couldn't exist. He had started to think about the fact that there must be a designing something, a designing force or a designer, something that caused this kind of balance and beauty and structure. And then he said, but it's not your God. Because he didn't want it to be a personal God. Because if you just stop for a minute and you think about the design of DNA such that if a fish crawled out of the ocean hundreds of millions of years ago, and that fish had everything in it to come all the way down to humans, that's an amazing design thing. And we talked about that last week. And to contemplate that designer for those who are humanistic or atheistic evolutionists is a frightful thing. And so we shouldn't make it any harder for people to contemplate a designer. You know, we shouldn't pound them over the head with stuff. We should just grace and say, man, that's a cool piece of science, and encourage them. Keep looking. Because the more they find out, the more there's going to be this little whisper from God in the background saying, yeah, I'm out here. Not to end on a satirical and critical note, but I think this may be a good place to say this, and I don't know if there'll be another podcast that will be as appropriate when we're talking about what makes us human and the different theories of how we got to be human. Frankly, I think atheistic or humanistic evolution as a theory is intellectual suicide. Because if you are going to base all the differentiation that we see between humans and animals on random, undesigned, spontaneous mutations, you have to run this little saying that I developed years ago. And it goes like this. And I don't mean to be offensive if anyone's listening who's an atheistic humanist or an atheistic evolutionist. But this is the way it works in my mind. And I will pretend to be an atheistic humanist, okay? So you're not like, what? What? Why does he say that? Okay, so I'm pretending. Okay, here. Right. I am an atheistic evolutionist. I believe that my brain is capable of understanding how life began on planet Earth. I believe that my brain is capable of coming to a conclusion that is accurate in terms of how life began on planet Earth. I am an atheistic evolutionist, therefore I believe that all life began on planet Earth as the result of random, undesigned mutations, most of which were harmful. I am an evolutionist, therefore I believe that all single-cell organisms came about as a result of random, undesigned, spontaneous mutations, most of which were harmful. Now, there's several other steps of this, multi-celled organisms, invertebrates, vertebrates, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Come on, up to, we'll just skip ahead for the sake of time because I'm already in my garage. I am an evolutionist, therefore I believe all mammals were the result of random, undesigned, spontaneous mutations, most of which were harmful. I'm an evolutionist, therefore I believe all humans were the result of random, undesigned, spontaneous mutations, most of which are harmful. I'm an evolutionist, therefore I believe that my human brain is the result of random, undesigned, spontaneous mutations, most of which were harmful. I am an evolutionist. I believe that I am capable, with my brain, along with the other brains of humanists, to come to an accurate conclusion on how life began on planet Earth, in spite of the fact that I believe that all of our brains were the result of random, spontaneous, undesigned mutations, most of which were harmful. Okay, see? That, to me, is intellectual suicide. The flip side is that I can say I am a theist, actually a Christian. I am a Christian. Therefore, I believe that my brain was designed by God. It was created by God for the purpose of exploring his world, that he has hidden knowledge here, and part of the game of this life is for me to go out and find it. To be a scientist if I choose to do that, to be an author if I choose to do that and write fiction stories, to be a musician, to be an architect, to be a doctor. That the purpose of my brain, it has been designed by God, created by God, so that I can go out and find the glory that he has put into this world. And I'm not on my own. He's right there beside me, whispering to me and helping me every step of the way. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.